The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And as promised, it is time to go under the helmet with NFL and Nebraska great Jason Peter. And Jason, I am so delighted to report that it is a sunny 70 degrees down here in Fort Worth. I'm going to give you kind of a hard time, you know, with your Cornhuskers going to Norman, Oklahoma at the Lloyd Noble Center and walking away with a one-point win. I got to kind of give you a hard time. Sorry about that, JP.
Yeah, it might be a little too much too late though. Nebraska basketball hasn't really been, I guess, as strong as people hope for. Now Doc Sadler's been here a few years now, and I think he's a tremendous guy, and I love the way that he coaches, and he coaches them up hard, and you don't see that often, I think, these days anymore. I think so many of these guys, and I don't know if it starts on the recruiting trail, but no matter what sport you're in, it seems like a lot of these coaches, they befriend these kids almost, and they have this buddy-buddy relationship, and Doc, if you get to witness 5 minutes of one of his practices, you'll realize awfully quick that he doesn't go the buddy-buddy route.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that with a number of programs throughout the Big 12 Conference when I've had the opportunity, whether it's men or women, you know, to see those coaches get after those players. We're going to talk about a number of things this weekend on our show, but it is hard to believe, Jason, that March Madness is just around the corner. Are you kind of getting into it? I've been kind of dragging my feet a little bit. I'm kind of digging the Mavs basketball down here. They're playing really well right now.
To be honest, I'm a tournament guy. I don't kid myself. It's the same for when baseball comes around. I'm a playoff guy. I'm a bandwagon Yankee fan. The season's too long for me, and with baseball and in basketball, you just can't beat the environment that they create with the NCAA tournament. It's second to none, and I think they know kind of where their bread's buttered. With the NFL, I think you talk about the most popular franchise, the most popular league in the world. With baseball, obviously the focus becomes on the playoffs, but with basketball, it's the NCAA tournament, and that's when they become front and center. That's when everybody, at least the United States, is watching college basketball, and that's kind of my time of the year. So, you know, it's also tough, too, when Nebraska isn't a school that plays a role in the postseason play. Hopefully when they build the new facilities, and from what we've heard, they're going to be pretty spectacular for the basketball program, and you know, that's been something where they've been lagging behind, but they haven't really been an impact player when you're talking about postseason. So in that regard, you know, the people that kind of live in the area, we don't really, I guess, maybe get into it as much as some other people do.
I am curious, obviously, with you being right there in Lincoln, Nebraska, what are you hearing in terms of the transition now as this school goes to the Big Ten Conference? Is it going to be pretty smooth? Are you guys hearing a lot of feedback from some of the other schools in the conference?
Yeah, I think in terms of basketball, I think Doc Sadler and the staff and Coach Osborne, the athletic director, I think they're excited about being able to go to Big Ten basketball. I think it fits them better with it's more of that grinded out physical style of play, whereas in the Big 12 you can kind of get open, teams start running up and down the floor, and Nebraska just doesn't, they're not able to get those types of kids. I mean, you know, when you talk about basketball recruiting and the scholarships, I mean, they don't get 85 scholarships like football. I mean, they get, you know, maybe four or five a year to give out. And you're talking about such a limited amount of kids or limited amount of scholarships, but there's only so many kids out there, and everybody's going after the same kids. So by the time you get the pick, and you're Nebraska and you don't have much tradition, and at this point right now you don't have the best facilities in the world, it's hard to get those kids. So I know that was one of the big deals that Coach Osborne wanted to get done when he took over as athletic director, was building or renovating the facility that they have now and giving them a chance to at least compete.
What about in terms of with college football recruiting? How is this move going to the Big Ten? Will that change as far as them angling and positioning themselves in terms of where they go to get their recruits with the college football program?
It's been a question that Bo Pelini has had to ask, has had to answer reluctantly, but he reluctantly answers all questions. It's not something he really enjoys doing. He says it's not going to play a big role. They target certain kids and they go after them. And I think Nebraska, you're not a school that can. You can't stay alive just by recruiting in your own backyard. You've got to go out. You've got to get into Texas. You've got to get into California. I think, if anything, it might open them up to different areas or maybe reestablish themselves in different areas. Nebraska used to be a huge, huge player in my home state, New Jersey. You know, you talk about Mike Rozier and Irving Fryer and these guys. I mean, a lot of kids coming out of New Jersey. On any given year back when I was playing, we would have 6, 7, 8 kids from New Jersey. And I think now with, you know, going out and playing Penn State, being a little bit closer in terms of the games played to that East Coast, I think you're going to have to try to make some connections back there. I mean, certainly with Bo Pelini and the entire staff, it seems like he's putting together a staff from Youngstown, Ohio. They're going to be a huge player there, and that's obviously Bo Pelini's hometown. But he says that it's not going to play a big role and that they'll just continue to recruit nationally like they always have.
What are we hearing in terms of some coaching changes within the assistant coach in the off season? A little bit of movement going on there?
Yeah, I mean, the big deal or the big topic was what to do with Sean Watson, and he was the offensive coordinator, and he was a holdover from Bill Callahan's staff, and you know, there wasn't much you could do in terms of selling him to the public, to the fans. They just had enough, and everyone's sitting here saying, we've got a championship type defense, but we've got a eighth grade offense. And, you know, people are saying, gosh, if we could just even put, you know, 21 points up on the board or 16, 17 points, we'd have enough to win most games with the defense that Bo puts out there. So they made a change, and it took a while for Bo to announce it, because I think he – and it shows a lot about, I think, who he is as a guy. Certainly there's an image out there of him, you know, the yelling and screaming on the sidelines. But he wanted to make sure that, even though it didn't work out here at Nebraska with Sean Watson, he wanted to get him on staff somewhere else. And I truly believe that he had to go through the entire Rolodex to get this guy a job, just because there just hasn't been that much success with him. But he finally landed on his feet at Louisville as a quarterback's coach, and so he's gone, and as well as Ted Gilmore, who was another holdover from Callahan's staff. He was the receivers coach, and Bo has hired Els, his first name slips my mind, but he's going to be the new linebackers coach, and he comes from Ohio, and that was a position that Mike Eckler held, and he went off to be a defense coordinator at Indiana. And, you know, there's a couple other minor changes with Ron Brown, who was the tight ends coach. He's going to coach running backs. They did hire, I guess, the most controversial hire has been this Ross Fisher. He's from Massachusetts, and he was a high school guy. He played football at Colorado in the 80s, and he is a head coach at a high school for the past 2 years, and I guess in the off season he's a golf pro. So you can imagine what the message boards out here in Lincoln are saying about Bo Pelini hiring a golf pro to coach the running backs now. And Tim Beck, who was the running backs coach and used to be the passing game coordinator down at Kansas with Mark Mangino, he is now the play caller. He's the offensive coordinator.
Having a good conversation with Jason Peter this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Let's talk some more about your Nebraska Cornhuskers. It is also hard to believe that spring practice will soon be getting underway. And, you know, obviously we're seeing some movement within the coaching staff there, but that's going to be really key and important because you guys have a very ambitious 2011 schedule. You start talking about folks like Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State. It is not going to be easy, and you guys are going to have to get acclimated right away.
Yeah, I think they made a point, the powers that be over there at the Big Ten, to make sure that Nebraska does not win the championship in their first year in the conference. They really laid it out tough for them. But you know what? If you're going to be there and you want to be there at the end holding the trophy above your head, I think you should be able to beat whoever they put in your path. I mean, if you're truly the best team, then there shouldn't be anybody that should be able to knock you off. And I think Bo Pelini welcomes the challenge. I think he'll do a good job in getting these kids ready to play each and every game. But they certainly do have their work cut out for them. And, you know, I think with the guys that they have coming back, certainly I think a lot of focus is going to be on the offense, not only with the changes that we just spoke about at the coaching staff, but in terms of the quarterback position. Taylor Martinez is a kid that, took the state by storm after the first three games of the season. And it was quite comical. I mean, you'd walk through the supermarket and you'd see people wearing T-shirts with his number 3 on, and on the back it would say Team Magic. And I'm thinking, my Lord, I mean, this guy has played 3 nobodies at this point, and people are talking about, is he going to be a Heisman Trophy winner in his first year at quarterback? And I'm thinking, just wait till he's got to go on the road, wait till he gets dinged up a little bit. And sure enough, I think by the end of the year, everybody either wanted this guy to quit or wanted him to transfer because they were sick and tired of him. So the quarterback position is going to be a focal point. They went out and they signed one of the top quarterbacks in the country, at least a quarterback who can run the type of system that I think they envision here, and that's this Bubba Starling from Kansas. Problem is, Scott Boras is his agent, and he is rated as the number one high school prospect in the country. So whether or not he actually shows up here to play football in the fall, that's a whole nother topic. But he's a guy who, he's very Tim Tebow-like, I think. Not putting him on the same level, not even comparing him, but I think when you look at some of the factors and the traits that made Tebow so great, I think this kid it looks like he could have some of those things. I hate to toot some of these high school players' horns because they've never stepped foot on a college field. But I think, you know, in terms of potential, it looks like it could be something special.
Okay, kind of help me out here, Jason. I mean, obviously you're talking about Bubba and that his stock was incredibly high in terms of, you know, his playing ability, his resume. But what was it about Nebraska that made him want to stay perhaps closer to home?
I think that he has been somewhat of a Nebraska fan. Don't quote me on it. I think maybe his father maybe had been a Nebraska fan. But I think it was when he got the opportunity to meet the staff, he clicked with them.
Okay.
I think it's a very blue-collar staff that says, you know, what you're going to get out of it is what you put into it. And I think this is a kid who comes from kind of farm country in Kansas, where I'm sure he spent many hours up at the crack of dawn, you know, tossing hay barrels and cleaning up God knows what from, you know, who knows how many animals. But I think those are the type of values and core beliefs that he grew up in, and that was, I think, what Nebraska football coaching staff sold him on.
Okay, Jason, you've talked about and highlighted the quarterback position for the Nebraska Cornhuskers, but I'm circling the name Kenny Bell, wide receiver, obviously a guy to watch this coming season.
Yes, the receiver position at Nebraska has never been one that's been highlighted, I guess, just with all the years of running the option. And, you know, they still struggle, I think, to find those big playmakers that can run down the field. I think they have a hard time finding even the little playmakers that can run down the field, and the burners and the blazers and the guys that are game breakers. They just never seem to get those guys. You know, it's been a long time since Irving Fryer was a wide receiver here, and you know, we've had some good ones, but I think that's probably the position. If a kid wants to come in and rewrite the Nebraska record book, wide receiver is probably a good position to do it. But you know, with what Bill wants to do on offense, I don't know if they're going to go and get the big 4 or 5 star kid. You know, they got some athletes, and you know, part of the problem I think also is when you have a head coach that is defensive minded. Anytime you get a kid that plays both offense or wide receiver and corner in high school, if that kid is one of those athletes that's special, I think the head coach probably has a tendency to say, you know what, I think we're going to start off with this guy when he gets here in the fall. I think we'll give him a shot on defense first. And the truth is, offense will never see that kid unless, you know, things just go horribly wrong. That's the way it is when you have a head guy who's defensive-minded. And, you know, for me, as a former defensive player, you're not going to hear an argument out of me when it comes to that.
Well, when you talk about Nebraska, certainly a number of players to watch in 2011. And Jason, we look forward to, as the weeks go on and spring practice will soon be underway, hearing more about your big team and getting ready to head to the Big Ten Conference. Let's shift avenues here completely. Let's talk about the NFL's labor dispute. What are your thoughts on this? Obviously, you're a former player, played with the Carolina Panthers. Is this going to be resolved anytime soon?
I don't know. It looks more and more each day like it's headed for a lockout. And the problem that we're facing is that the owners are still set up to make a lot of money, even if this season doesn't happen. You know, they're still going to make, I think, almost $4.5 billion from guaranteed television contracts that they've signed. So they're not in any desperate need of this season taking place. Now, the bottom line, I think, for me is I think they have an internal issue among the coaches. I think you have guys like Jerry Jones, like Daniel Snyder, like some of these owners that are in these big market teams that pull in major dough. They don't want to share revenue with the Cincinnati Bengals, with the Buffalo Bills, and rather than pick the fight with the guy on your own team, I think they say the person where maybe we can make up for this is with the players. So let's try to lowball the players. I mean, everybody's been making a lot of money, and everybody seems to have been happy. I think obviously Reed kind of kicks in. The players were happy with the CBA that's in place right now. Obviously, there are some things that can be changed. When you talk about the rookie pay scale, things have certainly gotten out of control, and both sides agree that something needs to be done. And you know, if you're able to, say, take those big 6-year, 7-year contracts that, you know, those first 15 or 20 players are signing, and take that $50 million guaranteed contract off the table, and say you split the contract in half, well, now you've got, you know, $20 million that's coming away from the rookie quarterback that, you know, can be distributed among proven veterans. So I do believe that needs to change. But, you know, these owners, I mean, they talk about when a player doesn't work out, when they pay a guy $40 million in bonus money and, you know, the Jamarcus Russell or, you know, Ryan Leaf. But how many times do they have a player like, say, Chris Johnson down in Tennessee who rushes for over 2,000 yards and his base salary, what he's supposed to make that following year is $500,000, and the owners don't step up and they don't renegotiate his contract. So it works both ways, but it always seems like the player busts are the ones that are magnified. You know, there's just a lot of issues, I think, that are going on. But it's going to hurt more than just the game of football. But you're talking about jobs in all of these NFL cities. I think they're talking about, you know, 150,000 jobs that will be lost and $160 million to each one of these NFL cities that they're not going to see. They're going to lose it. The restaurants, you know, the clothing stores, the apparel stores, all that stuff, this is going to go down the toilet if a season's not played. And it just seems like everybody is going to be hurting except for the owners. And you know, I use that word, I guess, pretty leisurely, because when you're talking about some of these NFL players, they've got a lot of zeros in their bank account. But, you know, there are also a lot of guys that don't. You know, guys that were lower-round draft picks that have just been in the league for 2-3 years. I mean, these guys, you know, they're making good money, but they're not certainly making Peyton Manning type money. So
right.
I think there's a lot of people that will be hurt by this thing, and certainly the fans, because ultimately that's what it's about.
Jason, let me jump in here. We've only got about 2 more minutes on our program. Of course, we're talking about the NFL's labor dispute. Jason Peter providing some answers to some key questions. And I know that there's listeners, they're going to be screaming, driving down the road saying $9 billion in revenue from the NFL was generated this year, and 59.5% goes to the players. The owners received the first billion off the top in cost credits. You know, a lot of folks feel like perhaps the owners are the ones that are getting shafted in that the players are, you know, taking advantage of that.
I mean, I think it is kind of flexible year to year. I think somewhere, though, it's close to 51-49.
Okay.
And, you know, but it's all in the same ballpark. You know, certainly the owners, they do take risk, but that's what, you know, I think when you look at the players and the impact that they have, because let's face it, without the players, there's nothing. Certainly without some of these owners, you know, they might not own that team in the city, but I'll tell you what, there's another billionaire out there that will pay to have that NFL franchise. Unfortunately, you can't go out and you can't find another 2 or 3,000 players, however many are in the NFL, you can't find the next 3,000 players and have them go out there and have that same type of product. There's other billionaires out there. There's not other players that have that type of talent
right.
level. To me, like I said before, I think it has more to do with some of these owners not wanting to share money that they have coming in with teams that aren't in as big of markets and don't pull in as much cash as them. You know, but I think obviously, like I said before, you can't pick the fight with the guy who's sitting in your own locker room. Let's pick the fight with the guy who's sitting across. And it's unfortunate that, you know, you're not able to, I guess, see eye to eye on certain things. I mean, you're hearing things now about how my former owner, Jerry Richardson, is insulting Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and insinuating that Peyton Manning doesn't know how to read a pie chart. And, you know, it's a lot of money no matter which way you look at it. I just hope that at some point they get this thing done so that people have something to
right.
do on Sundays. Otherwise, I'll tell you what, you know who's really licking their chops here? College football, because that will be the focal point. It's already a huge, huge business, but look for it to even be bigger if the NFL can't get together on this CBA.
Well, Jason, we will continue with this conversation and extend it because it is very, very complicated. And one of the areas that we'll get into perhaps next week is, you know, I think about the veterans, the retired players. These are the guys that my heart goes out for because these were the ones that were the pioneers, paved the way. And, you know, and when you talk about retirement, they basically have nothing. So we will get into that conversation again next week. Jason, thank you so much for stopping by. We've gone long and we will talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.